Welcome to the Invest with Clarity podcast, where you will learn how success in investing, as in life, is the result of absolute clarity. Mark Pearson of Nepsis in Minneapolis, Minnesota, shares his passion for portfolio management and commitment to transparency and communication to allow investors to fully understand what they own and why, bringing them to clarity in their investments. And now, here are your co-hosts, Matt Halloran and Mark Pearson.
Hello and welcome to another Invest with Clarity podcast. I'm your host, Matt Halloran, with, of course, Mark Pearson. Today, we're going to talk about something that I'm actually kind of surprised that more people aren't attacking in the way that we're going to attack this today, which is Inflation Nation, or is it? Mark, what's going on?
Well, of course, always good to be back at the microphone with you, Uncle Matt. It is interesting. It is a topic of lots of discussion these days. And of course, you know, let me start with the basic premise about investing with clarity. Number one, should I really care if there is inflation or not? Now, as an investor, as yourself, or as a money manager like myself, should I care about inflation as it pertains to long-term investing and true portfolio allocation? As it pertains to that, I'd say no. But when it comes to your planning, when it comes to your spending, should I be looking at inflation? Absolutely. Because what most people focus on, this is we're going to go top down here. What most people focus on is, what's the rate of return on my portfolio? What's the rate of return on my portfolio? How much money did I make? How did I do versus a benchmark? Wrong questions. Wrong questions to ask. The first question that should always be asked is, am I on track to accomplish my financial goals? That's the number one question you really should be asking. That's why we don't benchmark. This is why we don't, for many reasons we've talked about, don't publish historical returns. So the question is, number three, why should I care about inflation? Because there is what's called your real rate of return in your portfolio. So let's say my portfolio does 10% rate of return. Is that really how much money I made? No. You have to deduct what inflation is. So if inflation is 4%, your real return is 6%. Most people spend more time focused on what the rate of return of their portfolio is, as opposed to really focusing on what is their buying power. In other words, The money I make, how much does it enable me to purchase? Purchasing power, buying power, is more important than actual rate of return. Let me give you an example. Mm-hmm. Let's say in a year, your portfolio goes down 20%. Most people would say, well, Nepsis, most people would say, let's go do some serious buying. But most investors would be freaking out, worried, and nervous. Gee, I lost 20% this year. Wrong. You don't lose anything or make anything until you buy or sell. But you focus on this number. You myopically focus on, gee, I lost 20%. But what if purchasing power, buying power, went down by 30%? In other words, the cost of goods and services that you purchase as a consumer went down 30%. Now, obviously, the likelihood of that happening is very, very low, but it's an illustration to draw a point, which is your rate of return is relative, as we've said many times before. What is going to be more important in accomplishing your financial goals, aka, am I on track to accomplish my financial goals, is what's my purchasing power? Did I gain or lose purchasing power? And that's ultimately what's going to help you accomplish your goals. Because if the cost of buying things goes down 30% and you went down 20%, net, you actually gained. Now, again, I'm not saying it's going to happen, but it's there to illustrate the point. When you talk about inflation, like portfolio returns, the inflation rate is relative. Your rate of return is relative. Nothing is absolute until you sell an investment or you buy goods and services. That's when things become absolute.
Now, hold on. We've been doing this for a long time. Why is this the first time that I've ever heard you qualify and quantify using purchasing power? Is this something that I just, for some reason, I don't know how the heck we wouldn't have talked about this. I've never heard you say that before, because that is such a different way to look at what's going on. Because Mark, dude, inflation, it's all anybody's talking about. Every single solitary podcast that we do, the news agencies, all of that, everybody's talking about it. Like, this is the end of the world. And you just shifted a paradigm massively.
Part of the reason why we probably haven't really talked about it is that inflation's not been an issue. We have been living in a world of deflation. As you've seen interest rates moving down over time, that's a deflationary event, right? Mortgages cost you less money. Buying a car, the interest costs you less money. There are certainly always areas that get more expensive, gas, whether it's gasoline or it's education or healthcare or whatever it may be. But the point is that as the 10-year has now moved up from its bottom of around 0.5% now to about 1.6, and you look at the cost of goods and services out there, particularly food, for an example, gasoline is back around $4 a gallon. Inflation in commodities, if you're buying a house, look at the cost of houses. Inflation is real, particularly in the big ticket items that we buy. I mean, I am blown away. You know, I talk to friends in the car business. They're like, selling cars above retail sticker. When does that happen? No one ever buys cars above sticker. You're always like negotiating a deal off a sticker, and cars are being sold at sticker or above. There's like no negotiating. And if you go in to buy a car, the dealer's going to say, if you ain't paying this price, so don't worry. Someone's going to be here in a little while and they're going to buy from us. So inflation in some areas is real. What does that mean? That means that you better have a portion of your asset allocation in areas that benefit from inflation.
Like what?
So, well, it's funny you should ask that. Well, as you, I believe, know, as do primarily just about everybody that knows me, I'm a wine snob. I love wine. And we literally just added a wine company to our portfolios for the first time. Because it turns out that wine companies during periods of inflation, don't ask me why, do extremely well.
I think many of us know why. but yeah, that's crazy. That's super awesome.
Yeah. So energy, commodities, and one of the shockers, technology. Technology, you know, we were talking offline before the podcast about how we run the size of business that we run with a very small back office. And as I think I talked about in my previous podcast, or certainly in history, I've talked about my technology background and my huge belief and passion in technology and the importance of technology in running your business. And so here at Nepsis, we spend a lot of money on technology. As I just told you, we've embarked on a major project using technology that, as we get done, we'll be super excited to share with the listeners as well as with our clients. When you look at inflationary periods, technology becomes more important because technology is one of the areas that becomes a deflationary piece. In other words, the more technology that you implement in a smart way, it allows your organization to be more efficient. So as wages, another inflationary aspect that's happening right now, continue to go up, you want to look for the most productive ways internally in your organization, of course, to run your business as efficiently as possible. So energy, commodities, technology, And believe it or not, in all seriousness, wine, for some reason, is a major, major piece of that. Now, as you know, we haven't really owned bonds for about, it's probably going on 6 years now. And it blows my mind because financial advisors and some investors will say, you know, gee, what do you do for your income and growth clients? Because they should own bonds. And I always scratch my head and look at them straight and said, who said they should own bonds? But again, financial advisors aren't money managers, they're wealth managers. And as we talked about in last podcast, a lot of financial advisors live in a cookie box or in a cookie cutter world. So when uncertainty comes up, and I'm going to allow you to elaborate on this in a second, when uncertainty comes up, people become more nervous, they become more anxious because there's so much uncertainty around the world of inflation. So when I told you I was going to do a podcast on inflation, tell the people what you said to me.
Well, I do remember. And so what we're seeing is this, it's almost like a polar opposite perspective. There isn't anybody who's talking about it in the way that you do, which is one with any sort of semblance of control philosophically and personally, because we're seeing either the world is coming to an end or this is the greatest opportunity there is. There doesn't seem to be anybody who has any level of clarity, confidence, or understanding in the real aspect of how this is going to impact their clients long term.
So number one, I think if you have your portfolio appropriately allocated, you shouldn't care. This is why clarity is so powerful in the idea of reducing the emotional decisions. Investors make decisions emotionally, but they shouldn't. They should make investment decisions based on information, based on buy discipline, based on sell discipline, based on investment philosophy, investment strategy. Because the reality is that I don't know, and all the people who are talking about inflation, frankly, don't know if we're going to see a lot of inflation, little inflation, no inflation, you don't know. So people always ask me about my investment strategy, and it's hard to explain. We've talked about our investment strategy in podcasts, but one of the realities of what we do in our investment process is we hedge our positions. In other words, the foundation is I want to own great businesses over time. I want to own businesses that can adjust to inflationary periods and frankly adjust to deflationary periods. And there's a lot of variables and a lot of moving parts that go into the process of investing in businesses. I have always been a hardcore technology stock owner. We have owned many technology stocks over the years, and I would argue that is the one sector where we've made more money than any sector for our clients. Technology by far and away. But as it pertains to portfolio allocation, I don't know if inflation is going to persist or not. So what the investor really needs to do is say, look, and it's certainly there are inflationary things going on. How long is it going to last? How long is it going to persist? We don't know. But you better own some energy. You better own some technology.
You just said something that I have to challenge you on, which is that we don't know how long this is going to last. Historically, right, we do have some evidence on how long inflationary patterns like this last. And so from your experience, you're not old enough to remember this, but you know what happened in the 70s with oil and some of those sorts of things, you know, that was the last major part of that people talk about historically when it comes to inflation. Don't we have an idea? Don't these have cycles?
Well, the first question I want to ask is, how old do you think I am?
I know how old you are, darn it. And so that was more of a joke. But
I do. Come on,
you weren't that cognizant in the 1970s. You were alive, my friend.
I remember gas lines. I remember expensive gas. I remember my parents buying a house in like 80, 81 maybe. And it was the interest rate was like 18% on the
18%.
House. Yeah. Yeah. I remember. So I remember those days. So that was a period of hyperinflation. Hyperinflation has happened in the past, but it's not normally a, let's call it a normal thing. Hyperinflation occurs, and it's highly unlikely. Higher than normal inflation is with us for another year, which is likely, if we can see that, we would revert back to a deflationary period like the last 10 years. Again, hyperinflation is very, very rare and has only occurred twice, my friend, in the last 100 years. So the statistical probability of hyperinflation is pretty low. Inflationary periods do happen more often. And when you think about high inflation, it's actually quite normal and it appears every now and then and is usually met with the Federal Reserve raising interest rates. This is one of the ways, and this is one of the debates that's going on in the markets right now in terms of the Fed chair raising interest rates to kind of squash the inflationary period. I will say this. I think when you look at numbers, I'm just going to give my personal opinion here now, and I'm going to talk a little bit, as I usually do, let's call it off the grid, and maybe talk a little bit more from a common sense standpoint. Let's pretend that I don't know jack squat about investing, about economics, about economies, about market. Let's assume it. I'm a day-to-day guy. I go to work, I get my paycheck, and I pay my bills, and I try to raise a family the best I can. As my dad used to say, common sense is uncommon. For guys our age, for a guy my age, when I bought my first house with my wife, the interest rates were 12%, and we bought the rate down over a short period of time to 10.5, like the first year, so you could qualify for the mortgage, right? So this is in the 1980s, believe it or not. And, you know, interest rates have from a 35, 36-year bull market have gone from this 18% range down to 0.5%. Well, when you get to 0.5%, while we did see some negative rate of returns for a little while, particularly in Europe, you want to talk about deflation, negative interest rates. I mean, holy cow. That's what I'm saying. If interest rates are at, if inflation's at 0.5%, which we did see some periods of that, and your portfolio did 3%, 4%, heck, that's quite a bit above inflation. Before I finish my point, I got to tell you, we do this proprietary investment policy and objective setting questionnaire, and this questionnaire asks, you know, the client, what is the most you feel comfortable with seeing your portfolio go down in any one year? And it gives percentage ranges. And then the advisor is supposed to ask the client, okay, but if you knew what companies you owned in your portfolio and you could go look at your statement and see the companies in your portfolio, then what number would you be comfortable with? And invariably, most people will move up one risk category.
Really?
It's an interesting study. Yes. So a lot of people who think they're balanced will go to growth and income. A lot of people who think they are income and growth will go to balanced. It's an interesting dichotomy because it goes to the power of understanding that when you go into your statement, you go, okay, these are good businesses. And by the way, I get dividends on some of these too. I'm okay because I know that you're going to be buying on sale because that's all we preach, right? Well, there's another question in the questionnaire that says, what type of rate of return would you like? How many percentage points would you like to see your portfolio do over inflation? Well, you get people who go, I'm income and growth and balanced on the whole questionnaire. And then when it goes to that question, they go, well, I want 4 to 6 percentage points above inflation for my return. And, you know, it's like you can't have your cake and eat it too. In other words, you can't say, hey, I want my portfolio to do growth type of returns and say that my risk tolerance for volatility is down in income and growth and balance. It's a disconnect. And this is some of the benefit of the process we take our clients through in the power of investing with clarity, right? So circle back to the comment, the conversation about interest rates and what they were doing and common sense to that. 6 years ago, we decided to really stop owning bonds because we thought that the risk-adjusted return, in other words, the amount of risk you were going to take to get the return you were going to get was foolish. And if you look at a 5-year or 10-year rate of return of bonds for the risk you take, it is foolish. But advisors will put bonds and bond funds in clients' portfolios to do what? To mitigate volatility.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I just wrote my founder's piece for last quarter, and I said, you know, I got to tell you, we're having a great year this year. Our portfolios are doing phenomenal. But I'll tell you the biggest problem we've had. The volatility this year has been brutal. There's been very, very little volatility. And frankly, to get the returns we get with little volatility is phenomenal. We need volatility because, as we've said many times before, clients make the most money long-term during bear markets. They just don't realize it at the time. So when you take a common sense approach and say, okay, the 10 years now at like 1.6, Matt, what's the statistical probability it's going to go down to 0.5% again, particularly with the inflation we're having right now? Low. Doesn't mean it can happen, but low. Let's just use some common sense here. I mean, are we more apt to see interest rates to go to 0.5% or go to 3%? And by the way, we were at 3% probably no more than 3 years ago.
Right.
And then when you throw in what none of us have experienced, a pandemic, which has brought bottlenecks to a supply chain, and you want to order furniture that takes 9 months to get, welcome to the world of inflation. You can't get an automobile like you want. You can't get furniture. You can't get basic materials. We got an energy problem. You can't get energy. And the economy is rebounding quicker than people realize, and hence you get inflation. Now, there's a lot of argument that the inflation that we're seeing is transitory, meaning we're in a transitionary period. The inflation's going to come down after a while once the supply chain gets in check. I don't know. The government just passed a $1.3 trillion infrastructure bill. You think prices of materials are going to go down? I'm not saying to go buy basic materials. I'm saying you should already have owned basic materials because they've had 100, 200% runs in the last 2 years. What I am saying is it doesn't matter what stage you are in any cycle, deflationary or inflationary. You want to have your portfolio allocated in a manner to take advantage of both scenarios and then allocate and use your buy and sell discipline as you always have. In other words, process before progress and stick to the knitting. Stick to your process.
Mark, it just seems like the universe just keeps chucking things in our direction, right? And challenging these closely held beliefs that so many people have. And by sticking to the knitting, knowing what you own and why you own it, it seems to be a legitimate solution to a lot of the anxiety that investors have surrounding their portfolios and their retirement money.
Well, when you think about it, let's think of it from a common sense standpoint. If I have a portfolio of stocks and I hold the stocks, now no one just holds stocks. You know, we, with the pandemic, we have done a lot of buying and selling as we've gone through a lot of transitions. And we prepared for inflation 15 months ago. And of course, we've already owned technology and yada, yada, yada. You know, we bought Devon Energy between $9 and $11 a share. And today, Devon Energy is at 43. And we only bought that stock 14 months ago. Think about that. See, that stock at one time was 75 bucks. Volatility creates the opportunity to buy companies on sale as part of your process. A lot of investors don't have their money managed the way we have managed money. They have people that put them into boxes, like we talked about in the last podcast. We have people that invest their money in these boxes that are cookie cutter. And so you have less flexibility and you have less transparency. And when you have less flexibility and less transparency, that is a precursor to enabling an investor to becoming more emotional about their investment decisions. And if you're in the investment business, if you're a mutual fund company, an ETF company, a broker dealer, Charles Schwab or TD Ameritrade, whoever it is, you want volatility because volatility does what? My answer is going to actually surprise you. Actually, I'm going to ask you, what do you think my answer is? Volatility brings what?
Opportunity.
It does. But volatility also brings eyeballs to the TV screen.
Yeah, I got you, dude. Yeah.
Commercials bring revenue. I mean, if I'm wrong, tell me. But that's basic common sense. So the media's job is to create an environment. I'm not saying it's there to create an environment of fear. I'm saying it's there. Their number one goal is to bring eyeballs to the screen. And when the eyeballs come to the screen, then you can tell any story you want to bring to get investors to make decisions. I used to always say, we get the most new clients during corrections because investors go, gee, my money manager or my financial advisor stinks because I lost 20% this year. And my response to that is, you lost 20% this year, but do you know why? Well, yeah, because the overall market was down. No, that's not why you lose 20%. And by the way, you don't lose anything until you sell it. So the industry, in my opinion, is so backwards thinking. It's so wrong in its thinking because we live in a world of immediate gratification and things that want to drive our eyeballs to the screen. Yep. Inflation is one of those talking points. So when you talk about people are either saying the world's going to end or it's a great opportunity, well, certainly the world isn't going to end. And I believe it does bring opportunity. But you know what? I could be wrong.
Sure.
I could be wrong. And so if I am, I'm going to stick to an asset allocation strategy. And more importantly, I'm going to communicate that asset allocation strategy to the client so that they know what they own and why they own it, and therefore invest with clarity.
Oh, man, brother. I'm so thankful that you took some time and broke this down today because there is so much misinformation out there. There's so much hype that's out there. There's so many opinions that have no foundation that it's nice to be able to say, even with this topic, the solution is knowing what you own and why you own it, because you're going to feel very differently about what's happening in the markets. And I'm air quoting there, because that's not what you're focused on. You're focused on the actual companies you own.
Right. You know, I'll tell you, I appreciate the comment. My head of research, Chuck, puts a lot of information together for me when I do these podcasts. And one of the big areas he put together for this podcast was pertaining to, you know, not just the kinds of industries to be in, but sectors to be in. And I didn't talk about it. And the reason why I didn't talk about it is because, well, number one, that's why our investors pay us.
Good point.
Number two, I don't want people to become myopically focused and say, oh, okay, then I should just own this type of sector, or I should own large cap value, or I should own small cap, mid cap value, or large cap growth. No. You should invest in great businesses over time, take an advantage of your top down, bottom up analysis, and continually strategic cost averaging great businesses with volatility to create yourself the ability to accomplish your long term goals.
Thank you, Mark, for going over Inflation Nation, or is it today? We will jump back to other topics. At some point, we're going to have Chuck back on the show to finish the mini series that we were working on. But thanks for your brain. Thanks for all you do. And
thanks for having me. You too. We'll talk soon.
All right, everybody, if you have not subscribed to the show, make sure that you do. If you have a quick second, you can give a quick rating on iTunes. That'd be super duper, or Spotify, or wherever you listen to the show. And of course, if you know somebody who really desperately needs to have some darn clarity in their life, share the podcast with them. It's super easy. All you have to do is click that share button. So for Mark Pearson, everybody at Nepsis, this is Matt Halloran, and we'll see you on the other side of the mic very soon.
The content discussed is for informational purposes only. It is not a solicitation or recommendation for any securities that may be mentioned herein. Advisory services offered through Nepsis Inc., an SEC registered investment advisor.
Securities discussed in this podcast are neither solicitations or recommendations. Returns mentioned in this podcast are not indicative of future performance.